From KALW's The Spiritual Edge podcast, this is our series, Sacred Steps. We take you around the world to meet some remarkable people as they lean on their values and faith to challenge the status quo. I'm Judy Silber. And if after you're listening, you want to hear more of these stories, follow our podcast, The Spiritual Edge. Today in the United States, the public health conversation is fraught. Distrust is rampant, information conflicting. It's hard to make decisions. You may be vaccinated, but then there's Delta. And what if, like me, you take care of a kid under 12 who can't get the vaccine? The uncertainty impacts our daily life in all kinds of ways. For example, the Jewish high holidays are this week. For the evening of Rosh Hashanah, I attended a service on Zoom. It was lovely, but the tears welled up. I felt connected, but also alone. I don't know about you, but I miss casual, random encounters with people. We need each other for reasons big and small. My father's best friend died in 2020, and he was so sad when he couldn't attend the funeral. We gathered by Zoom for a memorial. It felt like an imperfect substitute, but at least we had the chance to remember together. In today's episode, reporter Shayna Sheely introduces us to mental health counselor Noe Kasali in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. A few years back, his country confronted another deadly and highly contagious disease. Amidst the high death toll, he was determined to help his country grieve.
The car Noe Kasali drove was covered in orange dust when he arrived in the small town of Mangina in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, about an hour's drive from his home, down a bumpy dirt road. It was late summer, a hot day. Noe was wearing casual pants and a long-sleeve shirt.
We did not have any PPE with us. We came just wearing simple clothes.
Noe and two of his colleagues got out of his car and walked east toward a brick church with a metal roof. Dozens of people were waiting there, sitting outside. Noe approached them, but didn't get too close.
These are the public health measures, you know. Hug people, you cannot hold someone's hand. You wash your hands all the time.
He didn't shake hands with anyone. Instead, he looked each person in the eye and said,
Pole, pole, we are together, and we are sorry for what happened. Pole, 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 pole. Just so sorry, 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 but it's kind of a deeper sense of presence with you. And they look at that. Who are these people who are saying pole to us?
Noe introduced himself and his colleagues in Swahili as mental health counselors from a nearby town.
We provide mental health service. We are just here as a local program.
People raised their hands to speak. Noe called on a short woman, sitting by herself. Katumba Kinyatole.
Katumbu Kinyatole, yes.
She had like a head scarf. She was wearing like a blouse in some colorful traditional Congolese fabric. And she was sitting with some visible signs of, you know, pain and grief of loss after loss after loss after loss after loss.
Within 3 months, the virus, Ebola, had killed her mother, grandmother, 5 siblings, 4 aunts, and 2 cousins.
Her entire family was almost wiped by the virus.
Katumba Kinyatole told Noe that her remaining family had cautioned her not to trust him. They said people like Noe were bringing the sickness to them.
And then nobody from our family should attend this kind of gathering. The Ebola people are the one are responsible for the death. They call us the Ebola people. That's how they used to call us in the village.
The Ebola people. Doctors, nurses, Red Cross workers, burial team volunteers who disposed of infected bodies. And people like Noe, who hoped to heal the spirits of those who survived. This was in August of 2018. The virus had surfaced in the town of Mangina as the 10th and largest Ebola outbreak in the DRC. Months earlier, Noe never imagined he'd be working on the front lines of the epidemic. He was in his mid-30s, pursuing his dream of operating a mental health clinic in his hometown, a town called Beni, about an hour's drive east of Mangina. After work, he'd spend his evenings laughing with his wife, singing with his daughters.
I have four daughters. I am a lucky man.
A family man. So when newspapers, radio programs, and TV stations started warning about Ebola, he worried first about his family.
Oh my goodness, how am I going to protect my children?
The more he watched the news, the worse things looked. It seemed people weren't following public health guidelines at all. And when Red Cross workers tried to help...
So many people were very angry.
So angry, young people would attack health workers in the streets and...
Stand along the road and to yell at them and throw stones and hit them. A lot of them got wounded and injured while they are doing this precious work of going to bury people safely.
Some people believe that people who volunteered to bury Ebola victims really kidnapped them.
They don't want us to see the body because they are removing the organs.
Were stories you heard on the news or stories you saw firsthand?
Firsthand, for both firsthand and news, it was like, oh, wow, it was everywhere. Like the Ebola response team was really being rejected. It is terrible because I know how many people died in my country and that they would not have died if these messages were not part of the story of public health. The first months of the Ebola response, that really was like a war.
Like a war. Before Ebola, Noe's country had endured a lot. Harsh colonial rule, abductions that forced people into slavery a wide ocean away, political corruption and violence, forced labor in gold mines and rubber plantations. The disruption continued after 1960, when Congo became independent.
The history will tell you clearly that the country was already shaky and very fragile.
That fragility would directly affect Noe and his large, loving family. What happened to people he loved eventually led to the work he did with Ebola victims. Back when Noe was younger, his father, Yeye Kasali, was a pretty well-known Christian pastor.
Reverend Yeye. You know, and the whole region also knew him as Reverend Kasali.
And how would you describe his ministry?
A ministry of love. A ministry of love. He was really, he represented that person who brings people together from these different tribes.
One afternoon gardening, his dad collapsed. Noe was keeping vigil by his dad's coffin.
I was angry against doctors and they may have made him die somehow. And then I was angry. Yeah, just the world.
He didn't have much time to wallow in his pain. Within months of his father's death in 1996,
the news broke into the radio that the city will be under the control of rebels and everyone needs to find a way of saving their lives.
Armed militias fighting to overtake the president and leaving hundreds of thousands dead and widespread destruction in their wake were heading into Noe's town. He left school. Everywhere, he saw people running. His siblings told him, hurry up and pack.
One shoe, a pants, whatever you have. Put your small bag ready. We are leaving right now.
Noe, his mother, his siblings, and their partners headed into the pitch black woods. They walked for 2 days until they stopped on a plot of land and built a shelter from whatever they could find. Noe didn't know how long they'd have to keep hiding or whether they'd make it out alive. His sister didn't. She died on Christmas Day, 1996. She was in her 30s.
During that time, nobody was even available to come and comfort us as we are burying my sister. That was terrible.
Finally, his family got word that their hometown was safe again. A year later, he was back in school.
My grades were very poor. I was just broken. I was a broken boy.
Somehow, Noe finished high school. He enrolled in a university near his home. When it came time to choose an area of study, he thought about his scattered family, the people he loved and what they endured. He wanted a profession that could help people.
I said, all right, I'm going to study psychology. I'll study psychology.
He did well, graduated, married the love of his life, had a kid. A friend told him about an evangelical school in the United States, Wheaton College. There, he could continue studying psychology through a Christian lens. He applied and got a full scholarship to a graduate program. In August 2013, he got on a plane to Chicago with his wife and their toddler. He settled in and started classes on counseling and psychology. All the students in his field had to be in therapy.
And my therapist realized that actually I had not grieved my dad. He asked me, would you like to grieve your dad? And actually, he led me through a powerful grief journey in his office. We call it empty chair technique.
Noe faced an empty chair in the middle of the room, as if it was his dad.
So I went back to being a young boy. I said, Dad, how am I going to go through this life without you? There's something that was kind of moved out of me, like a weight that has been removed out of my shoulders. Like, felt like, yeah. And that was really unique, you know, very powerful.
You're listening to Sacred Steps, a series from KALW's The Spiritual Edge podcast. You can hear more great stories like the one you're listening to right now by following The Spiritual Edge on your podcast app, or go to thespiritualedge.org where you'll find story transcripts, photos, and other links. Now back to the story about mental health counselor Noe Casale.
Noe earned a degree in 2 years. Then he started packing. When his friends and family back home heard he was planning to return, they said,
you are coming back here. You are coming to this place that is in fire. Don't come. Don't come here. You stay there.
In 2015, the United Nations called his home region, North Kivu, one of the most volatile provinces, with armed groups that had a history of sporadic but serious outbreaks of violence and terror. Noe did think twice about leaving the U.S.
It's unsafe, and how can we go as a family now? I'm a father.
Days before his departure, Noe stopped by his advisor's office to say goodbye. When his advisor opened the door, Noe burst into song.
Lord, you can use me. Take my hands, Lord, and my feet. Touch my heart, Lord, speak through me. If you can use anything, Lord, you can use me.
Noe flew back with his growing family. He packed a guitar, a portable play therapy set, and nice shoes for his mother. Beyond a Christmas reunion with his family in the DRC, Noe focused on his goal: starting a mental health clinic. He opened the Bethesda Counseling Center in Beni with 4 staff members a year after his return. They didn't charge their patients.
As soon as people discovered our approach, our work, our services, whoa, it was packed. The office was packed.
People walked, they drove. They rode their bikes from towns nearby and stood in line for hours. Mostly, he saw people who had experienced domestic violence, depression, nightmares.
So sometimes I feel hopeless, like, how, when is really these terrible things going to end?
2 years after his clinic opened, Ebola surfaced in the town. Its symptoms include vomiting, diarrhea, and internal and external bleeding. Among infected people, the fatality rates range from 60 to 90%.
We knew there was no treatment, and I was there again with my family.
Noe heard people spreading rumors that Ebola was a hoax. Mangina reported the most deaths. The survivors there?
They were portrayed as very aggressive people. They are burning cars, they are stoning us.
Based on what he'd learned, he knew.
It's a trauma response. These people need to grieve.
To help them, he'd have to be with them. In Mangina, the epicenter of the virus.
How old were your kids at this point?
My firstborn was 5, and the secondborn was 3. And my third child was just 8 months old.
His wife asked him, why keep making dangerous decisions?
Can you stop doing this for now? Do we need to do this? If there is one thing that my relationship with God teaches me, it is compassion. It makes me ready to serve in such a difficult time as Ebola.
Noe decided to evacuate his family to Uganda. Ebola wasn't really a problem there. He'd stay with his family there for a while, and every few days, he'd return to Mangina to help people grieve.
The denial, the anger were very detrimental toward the grief journey.
A big part of that grief, Noe says, was that people couldn't attend their loved ones' burials.
You cannot even come close to the body because how much infectious the body is.
In normal times, among one of the major ethnic groups in North Kivu, the Nande,
people tend to wash the dead body
and clothe the body with new clothes.
People come to touch and smell the body, to sing and dance around it, to cry.
This sense of showing up is very important. Without any invitation, people come and come and come and come and come. And all of a sudden, you see a huge community of people gathering around the grieving family.
During the Ebola epidemic, trained burial volunteers and body collectors wearing protective gear picked up bodies to safely bury them, often in unmarked plots. The absence of ritual, Noe realized, detached people from their loss.
You are still kind of questioning if it happened or not.
He'd felt that way.
I really remembered my sister, and then I knew exactly what we lacked there.
More than 20 years later, Noe realized what he and his staff could do for the living.
We should bring 5, 6, 7 families that lost their loved one together.
If he could somehow recreate the rituals they'd lost and help them grieve, Noe thought he might be able to help them work through their feelings of denial and anger. Might ultimately change their responses to Ebola workers and to the disease.
I needed a tool, and that's where I remember this link from a colleague.
Noe was on a listserv with friends from grad school. One of them had sent a link to a technique called a goodbye letter.
It's a letter that you are writing to the person that you lost.
Kind of like the empty chair exercise Noe's therapist had walked him through in grad school. The letter would help people say goodbye. He translated the letter and printed it out. On it was a space to write the name of the person who died.
I remember a time when you taught me something. I want you to know is I will always remember. And then from, you put your name. It was a breakthrough when I found that tool.
With public health as a top priority, the letter exercise became part of a grieving program that Noe developed with his team for the town of Mangina. During group sessions, survivors shared stories about their deceased relatives. They brought photos, prayers, music that could help fill in for what they'd traditionally done at burials.
They'll say, my loved one was a carpenter, another was a farmer.
One woman wrote a letter to her mother. When she read it out loud in front of a dozen people,
she went outside and she picked a flower and came in and started to say her words while she was touching that flower. And it was so much tears that the flower fell off her hand. She went down on the floor and put her hand on the flower. And that's the part that really, really touched me.
The last step in Noe's program replicated a Nande gravesite ritual.
They call it Muhima Maharo, cover with a little seed. And 3-4 months later, you see those little flowers growing.
Many Ebola survivors couldn't really identify where their relatives were buried. So Noe's team told families to choose a tree and a special place to plant it.
They said, yes, the tree is a good idea.
Some requested fruit trees.
Well, one day we can eat the fruit from that tree and we'll sit under the shade and it'll tell a story of what happened to us.
Katumba Kinyatole says she used to sell fresh fruit with her mother.
Do you remember what type of tree she planted?
Yes, yes. It's called mari. Mari. It's a type of fruit that is really like avocado looking, but it turns orange or red. Very, very beautiful and very, very sweet. So good. A lot of juice in there.
People have planted more than 100 trees around the Beni area in memory of loved ones who died from Ebola.
The last time I was in Mangina, looking at all the trees that were planted, I really felt like this sense of like, yes, there's hope, but also this sense of then what? Then what? Even after Ebola, what is next? After a pandemic such as COVID, what is next? We're going to face another crisis, even larger than scale than what we have already seen there.
Beyond these diseases, Noe knows his country has plenty else to heal from.
Deep violence that never stopped.
I feel like, I don't know, when I hear you talk about it, I just feel a little bit defeated and knowing that this is just one of many instances of suffering and that there will be more to come. I think I would just maybe give up.
I think it's ultimately, the work of my father impacted the way I work and serve today, and it grounds me to serve. And I don't want one day, Shaina, to look back and regret that I did not do what I was supposed to do when I had time and energy to do it.
It's cool that you have a sense of knowing of what you're supposed to do.
I think it's when you know it, then it makes you to do more.
He counts knowing this as a blessing. For The Spiritual Edge, I'm Shaina Sheely.
That story was reported by Shaina Sheely as part of the Sacred Steps series. We're a production of KALW's The Spiritual Edge in collaboration with USC's Center for Religion and Civic Culture. Noe Kasali wrote and recorded the song you're listening to right now. It's called Grief and Healing. If you haven't already, follow The Spiritual Edge podcast wherever you listen. We've got lots more great stories on the way. You won't want to miss them. You can also visit our website, thespiritualedge.org, for more stories, transcripts, photos, and other links. Support for Sacred Steps comes from the John Templeton Foundation and the Templeton Religion Trust. Cheryl Duvall is the Sacred Steps editor, Tariq Fuda is the engineer, Tom Levy is the photographer for The Spiritual Edge. We're grateful to all the people who helped get this Spiritual Edge podcast out into the world, including Megan Suisse, Heba Farag, Ben Trefney, Shireen Adel, Lindsay Myers-Humley, Sadia Tarmizi, Jeffrey Burke-Witten, and Megan Jones. Lastly, we know we're biased, but we think these are special stories. We could use your help in spreading the word. If you like what you're hearing, please rate or review The Spiritual Edge on Apple Podcasts. It helps a lot. And please tell your friends. I'm Judy Silber. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.